On this episode of the Real Life Caddy Podcast, myself and Zabo kick off things with some caddy stories from the past few weeks. Our friends from Texas were in town for a full month, and there were some great tidbits, including an epic story about our main man McCoppin getting chased by some turkeys. In other news, there was also an incredible encounter for both of us with a podcast superfan, and a less enjoyable experience with a very hands-on golfer. The main segment of the podcast breaks down the recent experience I had when I caddied for a pro. We discuss the differences between caddying for a pro and Johnny Hack, any mistakes that were made, and the highs and lows of tournament golf. We finish things off with a long listener mailbag question and our listener shoutouts. If you have any questions or comments, please send them in on social media or via email, podcast@glorifieddonkey.com. Many thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode number 99 of the Real Life Caddy Podcast. This one is called Caddying for a Pro, Part 2.
The second half of it.
The second half, because you were part one.
I was part one. I was involved in part two, but I wasn't. You were more so involved in part
two. You were hugely involved in both, I guess. Yes. So we will move on to that in the meat and gravy of this episode. However, as always, we have to start with our caddy stories.
Absolutely, yeah. It's we're now into October, but that means September just ended. And as many of our listeners have heard in the past, September is our month with the Southwestern Interior guys, Dallas Flooring Company, Interior Company.
Yeah.
That brings in different home builders week after week, and man, they are some beauties, some beauties. And there's always a good story or two to be had in that month for sure.
There was
many stories this month.
Headed up by Chris McCoppin, otherwise known as Chop.
Chop, Chop.
Whenever I'm carrying for him, he will shoot 80s. Whenever Zabo's carrying for
typically
him,
typically under par when I'm carrying for him, yep.
Yeah. He'll be in the 70s, which very again. True. Zabo, the biggest cheating caddy I've ever seen.
Or he just, you know, he rises to the occasion when I caddy for him.
What did he shoot? 76 or something?
Yeah, 76 at Spy.
And then you send me the scorecard and I reply by saying, legit. Were there any mulligans? Was there any bump in the ball?
No mulligans.
And you didn't even answer, which told me everything.
Bumping the ball, I mean, come on. Yeah, you're right. You're right, but those guys bump the ball.
It's almost like the end of an era because he's out here for a full month.
He's a resident here for the month of September.
It's a brilliant idea, actually.
It is. It's good on him. But although he is, by the end of it, ready to go back.
He's ready. He's done. I said to him that he should next year he should take off to San Diego or something for like 3 days.
Just get a vacation from his vacation. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot. And he does a lot of work too. So good on him. He does a good job with it.
Yeah, well he gets on with most of the clients, but you know, it's different from hanging out on a Saturday night, maybe after a game of golf with clients.
Yeah.
And when I say that, clients, I mean proper people with proper jobs, not caddies hanging out.
Real clients,
But he's living at a house with them, and then he's, you know, hanging out with them, having breakfast, having lunch, playing golf, having dinner.
Gotta put on his game face too. He's gotta entertain different people in different ways. He's very good like that though.
He could be a caddy.
He could. That is very caddy-esque, you know, he has to put on many different masks.
They were here for a month, as you say. I think I probably did about 15 in the loops. Did you up in there somewhere?
That was right up there, 15 to 20 probably. I mean, first tee week I was out, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But I was out. But man.
Couple of good stories.
There's highlights, certainly highlights. One of the highlights for sure is having Bob Burton there.
Yes.
Bob Burton is
was he like the president of the company?
He's the president of the company. Bill McAdden, who bought the company and owns the company, hired him on as the president. Him, Chris, and Terry Gifford work hand in hand. They're like the top three at the company. And he is always just laughs.
How old's he? How old's Bob? Like 50?
Bob? At least. Right. I think he's like that.
He's like a child. 60. He's like a child. He's like 16 years old.
Yeah. He is beauty.
That was my favorite loop of the month. We proceeded. So there was Chris, him, and then another of their employees. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to be in their best behavior with their clients. They don't have to do any pretending, nothing.
Exactly.
It's purely just schoolboy chat with you and I.
Laughs, drinks. And actually, this is not only the banter back and forth, but this was the round with the turkey incident. Should we talk about that now, or do we want to talk about all the chatter back and forth
first? I would start with the chatter. Because...
I mean, because the chatter was great. We started talking about, these idiot golfers and what they say to people. And it's like he sprays one off way right on a short par five. It's like, par five, that's not going to hurt you.
It's not going to hurt you.
Of course it's going to hurt you. You just shanked it on a par five and you got 460 yards. That hurts you.
We almost have to do another episode with some of these for new listeners, because I think we did it years ago. Whose line is it anyway?
Oh,
I think it was like Matty D. It was tremendous. Every single shot almost.
Yeah, there was a new comment. It's like, oh, here we go again. Yeah.
Never up, never in. Yeah. Can't birdie them all if you don't birdie the first.
Never heard that one before.
That truly was my favorite look.
Why don't we switch up the order parts? It will do a lot better. Yeah, because you've been doing so well with you going first, making eights every time. Yeah.
What do you feel about the use of the word pards?
I hate pards. Oh. And unfortunately, that is a big Texas thing. A lot of those Texas people go, hey, come on, Pardsy.
Hey, Pardsy. Yeah. Pardsy.
Ridiculous.
I know, but Bob, it was good fun, good laugh. However, it was, as you say, 13th hole. We finally have the highlight of the
week. Oh, my God. So at this point, McCoppin is quite a few doubles deep, and he is pretty hammered. So I saw the potential for this incident, because at the Wii course, the last few years, we've had these turkeys that have appeared, and they've multiplied, and there's big packs of turkeys, and they're very aggressive turkeys. So I looked at them, and there was a big pack of them, and they were sizable. I was like, oh, this is good. I said, Chop, just so you know, don't go near those turkeys, because these are very aggressive turkeys. They will come after, and they will hurt you. And he goes, no, back home, it's turkey season back home. And he does this like Mr. Miyagi little karate kick. He goes, bah, and you scare him away. I'm like, Chop, trust me, you don't want to try that with these turkeys. Not a good idea. He goes, no, Zab, I got this. So he starts walking over there. I'm like, Chris, hold on. I'm like, here, take this 7-iron. You're going to want a club with you when you go there. So he goes over there, and I'm like, hey, G. Like, get your phone ready. You're going to want to get this on the camera.
Yeah.
So you pull out your phone, and I go back to the cart, and I have my phone out, and he starts walking over there. I'm like, he's really going to do it. And he's like, he's a good bit away from him. He's probably 30 yards from him. So that's a good bit of distance. They're not going to come after you from 30 yards. But he does that little Mr. Miyagi like him. He goes, ah! And the turkeys, they took notice, and they started creeping towards him. And then all of a sudden you see Chris start backpedaling, and then they start, once you start like moving away from them, they're like, oh, you're going to run from me? I don't think so. They started charging him. So he started turning around, running away. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And then they started chasing the other dude, and then Bob Burton, they started chasing Bob. And Bob's a little faster than Chris. So Bob sprints in front of Chris. He gets way ahead of the turkeys, and then the turkeys realize, we could catch Chris. So they turned around and they zeroed in on Chris, the whole pack of them. Yeah. And they start charging him. And then he does like, he's running away from him. And then he realizes he's not going to get away from him. So he turns around and he does like an on guard with his 7-iron.
Like Doug Tanyan.
It was hilarious. And the best part about this is run to the Glorified Donkey, Twitter, Instagram, any of those. It's posted on there. We have this all on video. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I laughed like a little schoolgirl for like, it was the funniest thing I've seen in many months.
You can hear you in the video going,
I know. Dude, it was so much fun and so funny. And I'm glad I planted the seed, because it made for a great
moment. He started saying to us the following day, he'd text his dad, and his dad says, oh, they don't like the colors red, blue, black.
That was it.
All the colors. No, you were the largest target.
Yes.
You did the Miyagi move.
Yes. You were an instigator. You poked the bear. Or the turkey in this instance, and it didn't work out well.
No, it's good stuff.
It was very
good. It was fun. I actually drove past them the day before, and they just sit in the road. You drive, you get closer and closer, and they start spreading themselves.
Yeah, they don't move out of the way.
Oh, they're ballsy. They are ballsy. There was another lad in that group at the end. His name was Brad, playing with his wife.
Okay.
And with McCoppin and his wife.
Yep, I wasn't in that group. But
well, we always get the guy, the husband who's overbearing. Who's giving lessons.
Oh, God, the worst.
Super encouraging.
Not bad if you're encouraging, but the lessons, my God.
But I think the lessons come from a place...
of love.
Of them trying to help.
Of course.
This guy gave his wife one compliment all day on 18 green.
Was it about her golf game or about her retire?
he kept on saying she looked good, right? But regarding the golf, pick it up. How much longer are we going to have to watch this?
Ouch.
Oh, it started right from the start.
Ouch.
And then he would, because we're playing a match, the guys against the girls.
Yeah.
And the girls get, you know, they get waxed. As Dylan,
oh, yeah,
McCoppin's
she was
wife.
She was like, I got 36 handicap or something, like a 43.
41.
Yeah. 41. I didn't realize handicaps went up that high.
That's what I said. How can you, she was getting 41 strokes.
41 strokes.
So five of the holes, she was getting three.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And she needed him.
But he, oh, yeah, she'd hit it to 20 feet on one of the par threes. And he goes, I'm not worried about that. No, no.
Wow.
Go, well, you're putting ping pong, ping pong.
And
then,
ouch.
Then she started going, yeah, I'm kind of like, oh, there goes ping pong again. I was just like, this is bizarre. So it was brilliant. I'd never come across that in my life where, you know.
Husband antagonizing the wife.
Another thing that happened to me in this past month, that it wasn't to do with the McCoppin group. This, but you know who it was because you were on the job as well. You know the people. And you said to me in the first tee, get ready for inappropriate touching.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So.
Oh, yeah. I've caddied for this gentleman in years past, and I warned him. I said, gee, you're going to feel a little uncomfortable. You may have some good touches. You may have some bad touches, but it's going to be weird.
I kept tally marks because, you know, I'm not going to go and scream hashtag me too, right? I'm not going to make a t-shirt.
Although on this
that.
One, you might be able to.
It started in the first, mm-hmm. straight out of the blocks. We're going
usually
down
does.
The first hole, and he actually stroked me from the bottom of my neck.
Ooh.
To the small of my back.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like him.
So I actually gave him two tally marks for that one. I felt as if a backstroke was definitely
a double hashtag there.
There was a touching to the arms, to tap in the head.
He likes a little head touch. Yeah,
and then on the front, on the chest.
Yeah, the frontal ones can get uncomfortable sometimes, depending on how far down they go. Yeah,
he got two of those.
Yeah, I know.
Two for that. Tally marks. 18 holes. Guess how many?
24.
You were close. 26.
Wow, I was under?
26.
Dang, that's impressive.
On 18 holes. I had, well, you know, because you got the doublers.
Yeah.
And there were some holes that...
It's
were,
impressive, although
taps.
I'm not surprised. That's impressive, but I'm not surprised. I've caddied for this gentleman before, and I warned you. I did warn you.
Inappropriate touching. I didn't actually know how to feel. I thought to myself, this is really strange.
You just take a nice warm shower after and wipe off all the bad touches.
We met a super fan this past couple of weeks.
Oh my God. This could be the craziest thing that has ever happened since the Real Life Caddy podcast has probably started. So this actually gives me hope for the future of this podcast, that it's growing and it's getting out there and people are listening to it that we're not, you know, people that we're not caddying for that we're saying, here, listen to the Real Life Podcast, which we do to everyone we caddy for. But so this person came.
You just said the Real Life Podcast.
Did I? Caddy Podcast. I have not been drinking, I assure you.
You joined Caddy with podcast and went potty.
It all blends together. That's almost like that. That one you had many podcasts ago. You're like, lovemaker? I'm like, you mean matchmaker?
Matchmaker.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So you're actually caddying in the first tee, the Pure Insurance first tee, mm-hmm. for a pro, which we'll get into later. And each of these groups has a walking score that comes up. Right. They're volunteer positions. So this gal came up from Southern California. She drove up from Southern California. Her name's Kate McLaughlin. And I'm just a few groups ahead of you. So...
I think it's O'Loughlin.
No, it's McLaughlin, I think.
McLaughlin?
Yeah.
We'll double check that for the end.
We'll give your Instagram later. But anyway, so she's the scorekeeper. You can tell how it went later. But so I finished like three holes ahead of G, and I rush out to watch them finish because they're having a phenomenal round, which we'll get into later as well. But I'm on the 17th hole, and there's like a little platform up there, and G's walking off the tee box, and I see him run over to the scorekeeper, and he's tapping her shoulder and pointing at me. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? And she looks at me and her eyes get wide and she starts running over to me. I'm like, who is this lady? I've never seen her before in my life. I'm like, she's running over to me. And she looks at me. She goes, I'm a huge fan. And I look behind me. I go, of me? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this is my first fan I've ever had in my life. Of me? And she goes, I listen to the podcast. I'm like, no freaking way. I was like, you're from out here? You listen? She's like, no, I'm from LA. I'm like, wow, you listen to the podcast? She's like, yeah, I love you, Angie. I love the Real Life Caddy podcast.
Crazy.
I mean, unbelievable. And not only that, she's like, look at what I posted this morning on her Instagram. And she showed me what she posted on her Instagram. She said, driving up, you know, Pure Insurance First to you open, listening to the Real Life podcast. Maybe I'll run into Big G or Zabo. Hashtag fangirl.
Fangirl.
Fangirl. And I looked at it. I'm like, wow. And look at you. Well, you met us both. We're making dreams come true.
She says, oh, I tagged you. I said, you didn't tag me.
She didn't.
But she never actually tagged. So we didn't know. I was going up the 11th hole and she came up to me and said, what's your name? I says, Gordon. And she almost fell apart.
Yeah.
She almost fell over.
That's crazy how that works. And she has what? There was 79 groups. So there's a 2 in 79 chance that she's going to be in your group or my group. That is not very good odds. And she happened to be paired in your
group.
And
I wasn't even going to work the tournament. So it would have been in 1 in 79.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And she met us both in the same round.
Yeah.
So, Kate, it was a pleasure. Great job on the scoreboard. And
Keep listening. Thanks for listening.
Dreams do come true.
They do. Yeah. You want to meet Big G or Zabo, come up onto the Monterey Peninsula. We're out here.
Before we move on to the next part, I carry for some Asian guys, sort of second generation, two Chinese, two Koreans. I absolutely love these guys. They're kind of caught between two cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So you're Americanized, but you also kind of have your...
Those are fun guys to carry for, yeah.
Like Hoon and the boys, I'm guessing
love Hoon,
those guys.
Love Patrick, love Peter, yeah.
You see? Now, this guy... Very, very early on, he's like, oh, you're from Scotland? And I says, yes. He says, where? I says, explain. He'd been everywhere, actually. He's kind of a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And not like a traveler as in a gypsy, but a traveler as in he travels places. And he says, oh, what's the name of the strip club in Inverness? I'm like, I don't know.
You don't?
Does Inverness have one? It's only sheep up there.
Yeah, that's true.
I never thought they had any strip clubs. There's one called Private Eyes. And
well,
he started asking
name
me,
for a strip club.
Well, he said there's this relationship between, where do they make all the computer chips right now? Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Between Taiwan and Great Britain about some monkey. That Taiwan gives Great Britain a monkey for to loan them for the zoo. It's been going on for 100 years. It's called the Gibbon.
Okay.
A Gibbon. And he was obsessed with this. And he told me that a stripper called Star, working in Private Eyes in Inverness, had told him this. This was his highlight of his trip to Scotland.
The girl learning. Working the strip club told him about the...
The Gibbon.
The Gibbon.
Because he said, I'm from Taiwan originally.
So he was just blown away by the fact that they loan them a Gibbon?
They give them Gibbons.
Wow.
And then he went on...
Whatever floats your boat, buddy.
We were talking about... He says, something about women. I says, well, I've been to Poland. The women in Poland are really good looking, Eastern Europe. And I explained that when I'd spoken to a guy in Poland who asked me if I liked the country, this is in Poland, he says, do you like the country? How do you find Poland? And I said, it's very nice. You know, women are very attractive. He says, oof, Polish women pigs. You want good-looking woman, you go to Ukraine.
Yeah.
So I told him this story, and he goes, I've been there. I went, you've been to Ukraine? He goes, yeah. This is the most bizarre thing ever. He says, oh, yeah, I went to Chernobyl. Chernobyl, you know, the huge 1984 or 1986, they had the huge nuclear fallout.
Yeah.
Where the reactor melted down and the guys are walking around going, oh, it's okay, it's only 5.6, you know? And then the guy comes in and says, well, how high do those giga counters?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, he says, how far?
Geiger counters.
Yeah, he says, how high does it go? He goes, 5.6. And it ends up being like, you know, 500,000 or something. And everyone,
melts.
A bunch of people die and whatever. But he says, oh, yeah, no, I was watching a special on HBO about Chernobyl. And he said, cool, I want to go there. So he and
said
three
nobody
of his,
ever.
Said nobody ever. He says, his name is Ed.
And he says, Asian dude, Ed,
and he thought that'd be cool. Let's go. So I think three of his mates went to Chernobyl.
Did they find any good strip clubs in Chernobyl with Gibbons?
He found plenty in Ukraine.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He told me all about that.
So, what
too.
Did he think of the Ukrainian women?
Oh, well, sensational.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. We meet all sorts in this game, don't we?
We certainly do.
Some great stories, but we'll move on to a good story now. The meat and gravy of the episode: Caddying for a Pro, Part 2.
Four.
This past couple of weeks, we had a big tournament out here.
Yeah, one of our big ones. It's we have two real big ones a year. We have the every year annually. We have the AT&T, and then the Senior Tour comes into town the first tee open.
That's it. So I was actually just going to take the week off. Well, not take the week off. I'm moving house right now. And I was going to work the McCopping group.
You were supposed to work it the whole week. And
play my rematch with Dylan.
You were going to pick her up at the airport, play the rematch. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, this was the day after the turkey incident. I'm caddying for Bob Burton at the Wee Wee course. And I'm out there on the course and I get a call, a voicemail from Kevin Streelman's former caddy, AJ Montecitos, and leaves me as a Zabo, call me right back. I need to talk to you right away. And I was like, Bob, I got to call this guy real quick just to see what's going on. He sounded urgent, like he needed something. So I called up AJ. He said, look, my buddy who I played college golf with got an exemption into the Pure Insurance. He just turned 50. He's a good player. He's got a good chance. I need you to caddy for him. I'm like, AJ, sorry, man, I'm jammed up. I've caddied for, and I bail on the McCoppin group because I've had this same guy that I've caddied for 12 years. So I can't bail on him. I mean, it's 3 days before the tournament, the practice round start. I can't bail on him. I'm like, sorry, man, I can't do it, but I'll get you somebody good. So I ran through a couple of guys who I didn't know if they had jobs. You were certainly my first pick, but I knew you were going to play. You weren't going to bail. I was like, you're going to play golf with Dylan. You're going to caddy for Chris and them. So the few people I said, no, I've already got a job or whatever. And then I texted G. I said, call me. And I said, he called me. And I said, look, I got this guy, Tim O'Neill. He got exempted in. And G's like, Zabo, my week's already set. I've already got my week set. I'm going to pick Dylan up. We're going to have a rematch. I'm going to caddy for McCoppin, and I'm not going to do it. And then we hung up the phone. I said, all right, I'll find somebody. And then I was thinking about it. I'm like, G's going to be the best fish. I said, Tim O'Neill. I said, look him up and mill it over. And then the texts start, and every caddy always asks, how much am I going to get paid? Once this, he goes, can you ask him if he's practicing every day? Is it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday? I said, he is. Times again? What are the times? What time's he playing? I said, he's playing at 12:40 tomorrow. He's playing at 8:30 on Wednesday. I'm not sure what he's doing on Thursday. And then he goes, have you seen the prize fund? Like, how much money am I going to get paid? I'm like, dude, just stick with McCoppin. I'm not playing 20 questions. At the time, I was at the DMV, and you know how comfortable being at the DMV is to begin with. And Gordon says, behave. I just want to know what money is in it if he makes the cut. It's hard to deviate from my plan for the week as I'm moving, and I had the week plan. I'm 50-50. And then I said, dude, I feel like I'm talking to one of those idiot caddies. I don't want to play 20 questions. Definitely good potential to make a lot of money. And then he's like, F it, amen. Damn you, Zabo.
Yeah,
and then I linked you two up. I did call Tim and I negotiated a percentage, which was pretty generous, I thought. And I said, I said, here's G's number. Give him a ring, and he did. And you can take it from here. How did your week start off?
I think now that you mention all those text messages and how obviously with the voice, I think that's exactly how when I was texting, I was going.
I feel like you were. That's how it made sense in my mind. I mean,
well, you know how I'm pretty direct, and I just once sometimes. I've made my mind up in something,
yeah. I get
it's very hard because then I'm gonna have to. I had to bail on McCoppin's group, I had to bail on the rematch, and I had to bail on
another
group from Oklahoma, who in about 4 weeks' time.
We'll talk about
one of
them.
One of those guys will be the focal point of that episode because this was gold.
It's coming there.
So I now have to send several text messages to say, yeah, I'm a caddy. You know I said I would do that. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Which I hate doing that. And then I was also meant to be moving, of which I told the wife that I would do everything.
Yeah.
And now I was going to lose like 3 days.
I get it. Totally get it.
I look at the guy's stats. I see how far he can hit the ball off the tee. And I go, okay, this lad's got potential. If he's just turned 50 years old, we're in. So we have a chat. I meet up with him. We do a practice round. I remember how much I hate practice rounds.
Yeah.
The ones at Pebble are a joke.
No.
You put your name down at 12:30 and all of a sudden 12 people turn up in the tee and you start off as a foursome, then you end up two leave and then you join up with the next group and 5 hours later, even he said that. He's like, this is a joke.
Yeah.
First ever time out here. Tough. I'd never seen the course. He'd been in the area before, but never seen the course.
Yeah.
Obviously loved it. We have a day off, which was great. I go and play. With McCall. It was a couple of other caddies. And then on the Thursday we do a practice round at Spyglass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd said to him, just turn up at 7 o'clock and we'll go first.
Yeah, you were actually right in front of me that day.
That's it. Yeah. So we turned up 7 o'clock on our own with a golf cart and we flew around in 2 hours, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to me and he says, that's what a practice round should be like.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we then have the first round Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's nervous.
You know, yeah, how nervous was he?
I think he was very nervous because this was the biggest purse he'd probably ever been playing for.
Oh, for sure. Hands down. So, he's never played in any US Open or I don't think he played in any PGA Tour events. He played on the Corn Ferry for a bit.
Correct. Yeah. If anyone wants to check him out, Timothy O'Neill. That's O apostrophe N-E-A-L. And he's been a pro for 25 years, mm-hmm. 30 years. Very, yep. Very good golfer.
He is.
Went to college in Mississippi. Then he missed out on the PGA Tour twice, 2 years running by one stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. I spoke to him, obviously, about the podcast, and he has agreed that he'll come on and talk about his career, which will be interesting because I think it will be really beneficial to amateur golfers to hear about the ups and downs of how tough it is as a professional golfer.
And this
golfer.
Guy is really good, and he never really made it out there.
Now, I actually get the impression that he's somebody who's gotten better with age.
Yeah.
All the conversations we had.
Certainly showed signs of it during the tournament. Tell us, I mean, you started talking about the first round. He was tied for the lead after the first
after
day.
The first round. So
he had a hell of a round, right? I mean, you guided him around Pebble Beach.
It was, everyone was nervous. The amateurs
were you
are nervous.
Nervous?
Oh, I was definitely, absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, I haven't done a
tour event
for a pro 12 years or something.
Of course.
US Open qualifying was the last time I ever carried a pro bag.
Yeah.
And I honestly never thought I'd do it again.
Yeah. So you definitely had some nerves going?
Absolutely, yeah. It's just that extra, what are we doing here? And it went really well. He was very guarded in the first. His strength is his length.
Yeah.
So when he's hitting the ball 320 off the tee, the other guys are hitting it 260.
Yeah, yeah. 60, crazy difference. Yeah. Crazy
difference.
Yeah.
And he was really defensive with the big sticks in the front nine. And I said to him in the 10th, he put one out to the left and I said, little defensive with the driver there, the big sticks, huh? And he went, you noticed that? I went, yeah. I says, just think it's a practice round. Let it go.
Free it up.
And he did. He freed it up and it was 5 under on the back nine. 5 under for the last 8 holes.
Yeah.
That's when we saw you. Obviously, we met Kate and that obviously added to the enjoyment of that first round, tied for first. Mm-hmm. Now, I know my initial impressions were, I was not, your boy AJ had said to you, read the putts. You need help in the putts.
Well, no, he put me in contact with Tim and I talked to Tim directly and I said, what are you looking for, Tim? And Tim told me, he's like, you know, I don't really putt Poana. I want every piece of information on the greens. I want to know exactly what this person thinks, what this caddy's going to think it's doing. You know, I want to know.
That's what I thought. Because he said to me as well, he must have talked to AJ about the greens. Yeah, we need to know the greens in, which we know the greens inside out here. If you do it enough, you know, eventually get good at it. I guess there's some guys that don't, but I was expecting that only, but he was actually, it turned out to be a resort loop.
He wanted
for a really good golfer. So
what club should I hit? How far is all that?
Well, he said initially, he's like, how far we got? And I'm like, you might want to get your book out as well. I says, I'm awful at the books. He says, so am I. I says, well, if we're going to get it wrong, we may as well get it wrong together. So
did you lean on the book much, or did you just go off sprinkler heads and front edges and
I went
pins?
A little bit of both, you know, because you have your uphill, downhill, or what they like to call it. Is that with slope?
Adjusted. Is that adjusted?
On the ground. What's the D? There would be things carry over a bunker, especially in a par 3, for example. What's the front? If the pin's back left, you want
100%.
To know the cover over the bunker. So it was helpful. I didn't look at it once for the greens, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was surprised at how much he was taking my input about, and this is where maybe the issues come in day 2 and 3, because if someone tells me they hit a 7 iron 100 or a 6 iron 185, I'm going to expect you to hit 185 or between 183 and 187 when you're that good.
Yeah.
If you do this for a living.
When you're that good, for sure.
So
you know your exact caddy or carry yardages. Yep.
Yeah. I can only go off of what I'm told, but obviously thoroughly enjoyed day one. And that's when you start thinking, this guy's good enough.
Yeah. Were you bogey free the first day? was it a bogey free 66? You were six under.
I honestly tough can't to remember.
Hey,
we bogeyed four from the middle of the field.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He was 90 yards still, out.
So six under. I mean, that's
really good.
A strong start at Pebble. Really,
and he bogeyed number eight.
He had two bogeys and shot 66. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because again, on the eighth hole, he's 185 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, well, the wind's helping a little bit. It's downhill, whatever it is. A flying lie says, well, hit your 8-iron. Thing goes over the green.
Over the green?
Yeah.
Dang.
So caught a flyer, etc. So yeah. that was the first indication of, ooh, that's
yardages
not
are
number.
A little wonky, yeah.
And you start to believe after day one. You start getting a wee bit carried away.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, I'd never seen a senior golfer hit the ball like this. He hits the ball like a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
It comes off
and
the
he doesn't
face.
Look like he's 50 either.
No, no. He's not. He's a thoroughbred.
Yeah.
A lot of these old guys, they play that little, pussy fade,
mm-hmm.
protecting all those. No. This guy can move it left to right, he can move it right to left. But it comes off the club face like,
bullet.
Yeah. Like someone 15 years younger than him. So I'm starting to think, ooh, we get around Spyglass. We've got the length. Great. We're off reasonably early. We might end up getting the best of the, late afternoon, Friday, morning,
100%.
Saturday. Turn up at the course. 3-hour fog delay.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. It's already been a couple of weeks since the fog delay was ridiculous.
Well, I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning, right?
Rearing to go.
To meet up at 7:15 for a 8:20 loop.
Yeah, now, the one time in G's whole life he's been on time or early, and it turns out he was 3 hours early.
3.5 hours early. 4.5 if you want to think at it.
Yeah.
Because we teed off. We eventually
must have been going crazy.
11:38 we teed off instead of 8:20. Yeah. 8:38. So I've turned up at 7:15. It was brutal because the fog's cold. I'm wearing shorts.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone has to do the same thing. But the guys who are off in the afternoon, they can stay in the hotel room.
Yeah, exactly.
They know there's the 3-hour delay. Exactly. I'll just stay at home. So we're just, kicking dirt. And we got off to the greatest of starts. Birdied the first two holes, which is the back nine for us. So we birdied 10 and 11.
Crazy. I was a couple holes in front of you, and 10 is one of the toughest holes out there. And I was hitting refresh because I was super interested after you guys were tied for the lead. And at one point, and birdieing 10 is super rare out there, especially for those guys.
Well, he ripped 3-wood. So that
he had 3-wood there.
Whatever we said, about don't hold back with the big clubs. He didn't, and he was hitting absolute bombs. And we just lipped out in 12. So that had been birdie.
Yeah, and I was amped up because at one point, I don't know if you even know this, but at one point, you guys had a two-shot lead on the field. I was like, oh my God, G and Tim are going to do it.
the amateur in the group was kind of slow. He's meant to pick up when he hits double, bogey, right? Once he's five and a par four pick up.
Yeah, get
he
out
wasn't
of there.
Doing that. He's just sucking the life out of it. And I'm kind of focused purely on what Tim was doing, as is he.
Definitely.
And then next thing, you get someone from the PGA Tour coming up saying, oh, guys, you need to move up, need to speed up. So the ego, there's two holes, flustered. And at 14, a par five, we're 100 yards out, and we end up making bogey.
Oh, God, really?
And we go, birdie, bogey.
Yeah, I saw that ping pong, yeah.
Birdie. But, everything's going fine. And on the fourth hole, the pin's all the way back. It's a tiny, skinny green. It's like a big strip of bacon. And he asks, is it a 54 or should I just tomahawk a 60? And I said, tomahawk the 60. And he hits it perfect and it lips out for a 2. So taps in for 3. So we're birdie, right? Yeah. Now, I can't remember what we were, but we're probably tied first, tied second.
Yeah.
Get to the fifth hole, which is a par 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish with a bit more experience or maybe knowing that he was more nervous or he was amped up at this point.
Yeah, the juices flow sometimes and you're just adrenaline rush.
It's adrenaline.
Especially when you haven't been in that position before. He's never on that stage. This is the biggest stage he's played in. I'm sure he is. He's got adrenaline pumping through his veins.
Especially after the tomahawk.
Yeah.
And he ends up hitting a 7-iron. The wind was helping slightly. And we didn't communicate the type of shot. He actually, we never even talked about maybe hitting a draw into the wind.
Yeah,
I was just thinking fade club. All day.
Yeah.
7-iron goes 205 yards.
Way long.
Way long. Plugged. Nothing.
In the sand dune.
In the sand dune. Oh, God. Chopped out. Ended up making double bogey.
Oh, God. You can't make double.
Sixth hole. Nukes it again.
That is almost an always a bogey hole for. I mean, if you make par there, it's like making birdie on six.
He did. He makes birdie.
And he birdied six?
No, sorry. Par six. Par
still,
six.
That's still a great number.
And then at seven, he bombs it. Par five. So you're thinking, you always look at the par fives when you get length.
Mm-hmm.
And he hits in someone's divot, so we can't go for it in two.
Oh, jeez.
Ends up making bogey.
Oh, on seven?
I know. And then bogey's eight.
Yeah.
Because now.
That's another. Yeah.
He's thinking twice over the. Oh, he hit the perfect drive, but now he's going, what's the number? And I'm going, well, you need to hit it 165 ish, 170.
Well, what's that club? is that nine? Is that eight? Is that.
Completely spooked. Huh. No confidence in the irons or how far is this thing going to go. So
yeah, that's tough.
We ended up finishing out day two and one over for the, but we're still only three back on the
three
Sunday.
Three back of the lead going into a course that you just tied the low round of the tournament at.
That's it. And then he played very conservatively the first 10 holes. He wasn't.
On the Sunday.
Yeah. Bombing the ball with the driver, the three wood, whatever we're hitting, but not going for it.
Yeah. But like, he was a couple under though, right?
He was two under.
Yeah, which the front you really nine. Need to be three, four, five under on
the
first.
Well, you could. You think
certainly
that,
three or four on the front is what it's usually going to take to win on a Sunday.
I just remember the sixth hole on the Sunday, 78 yards out, hitting his third shot because mm-hmm. we'd hit a bunker on the drive and he hit it over the green.
He from 78 yards?
Yeah. And he just turned to me and he goes, dude, I'm amped.
Yeah.
So you know,
nerves. Yeah.
It's the nerves. It's the adrenaline. Everything gets to you. But he birdied the 11th, and I thought, here we go. But I'm looking at the scoreboard. He's not. I am, and I'm starting to see 11 under, 12 under at one point.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, 15 under is going to win this.
Yeah.
And you know what's so annoying is we chatted the whole time. In the practice rounds, this is a guy that doesn't want to just put his hands in his pockets and stay quiet.
Yeah, he wants
to,
talk,
chat,
yeah.
Which is perfect, right? He's got the perfect guy there. And we're walking up. During the practice round, I'd said to him, oh, what always used to get to me? And I thought it was interesting. And this is me subconsciously telling him to, you know, in my way, calm him down to say, oh, yeah, we always used to think on a Friday we had to shoot five under to make the cut for the weekend. You never did. You could level par, got in type
very
thing.
True.
So this is me telling him that. I also tell him another story about the 14th at Pebble, which layup. It's just very, very seldom do you go for it into.
Yeah, a lot of times it's
not
worth
yourself.
It. It's not worth it.
I'm saying that in a practice round. Why am I saying that? Because I'm almost already preparing him.
Yeah, plant the seed.
Plant the seed.
You might hit a good drive and still have the good layup shot.
So he's birdied 11, he's bogeyed 12, he's birdied 13.
So that's when I started following. That's when you showed up. He's a tough hole location on 13, and he took it on and threw a dart in there. It was a great shot.
And then
hit a mediocre tee shot on 14, but he's in the fairway. He got it down there.
I think it's about 260 front edge,
which is pretty deep off the tee.
It's not bad, you know. Yeah. And I'm thinking, three wood, this guy can get home. And I'm thinking, we need to birdie in to win this thing. We're eight under at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, 11 under ends up winning the tournament, Zabo.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can imagine. So now he hits the three wood. He doesn't commit to it. He didn't hit a good shot.
Yeah, and he ends it wasn't
up,
good.
He ends he up left
way
side.
Left, but right of the path, so still in shape to maybe get it up and down.
Gets it in the green and three putts.
Yeah, that was right? A killer.
So it wasn't say the three wood, the call of going for it in two that cost the bogey. But if I could go back, and still this is what, a week or so after the actual event, I'm kicking myself. I'm walking up that hole the other day and I'm just going, oh, if he's just come off birdie, lay up, get it in the green, give yourself
know.
A chance. I know, but you think to yourself, momentum.
You can't miss it like short right there, but he could have dumped it in that bunker and then it's a super easy four from there. He could have made easy four from the bunker.
He could have.
Can't miss it that far left where he missed.
It was, he hooked the ball, let's be honest. He hooked it. It wasn't a great golf shot. However, if you are a bit more experienced and you recognize that the player's nervy, he's either amped up with adrenaline or he's nervous and not committing, then all day long, that's a layup. Looking back in hindsight, because
hindsight's always 20/20. But then again, he lays it up and he's got 100 yards and he's amped up and he's like, "Well, do I hit the gap wedge or do I hit the sand wedge?" You know,
yeah.
You can always look back and say that.
It could. We end up bogeying 15, 17, and 18.
What did you guys hit on 15? Because you were behind. You didn't hit driver, did you?
Three wood.
Oh, you hit three. Yeah, and he was just too far right. Yeah.
There was a bit of wind coming from the left, and he kind of flared it. He didn't hit a good shot. And then you're chasing yourself. I always tell amateurs when I'm caddying, especially in par fives, let's lay it up. Especially if it's the first par five of the day and maybe the pace of play is slow or whatever. You just say, no, lay it up.
Give yourself
one good shot leads to a second, which leads to a third, which leads to the next one. It's all about momentum. Everything in golf is about momentum. Mm-hmm. And I feel as if we'd laid up there, you take bogey out of the equation, 90% of the time, and at least then we go 15. As I say, we're sitting at 8 under, and we end up being 4 over in the last 5 holes.
4 out of the last 5 holes, you bogey.
And then
at that point, though, I got to think, and you can tell me if you think otherwise, but he's thinking, because top 10 on PGA Tour, Champions Tour, they get into the next event, and Tim O'Neill has no status anywhere on any tour. So if he top 10s it, and he's already inside the top 10, even after that bogey on 14, he's inside the top 10. If he stays inside the top 10, he gets exempt for the next event.
Yeah.
And do you think that's creeping in his mind?
He would have known that, I guess.
Yeah.
However, I think the head went down a little bit because in 16, I told him I hit a putt. He said, it looks downhill, but it's not. And he said
he missed
that.
It. I saw that. He stuffed that in close, too.
Yeah. So
that's what I walked into after he missed that. And we went to the 17th tee. His head was down. And I was like, I can't watch this. I don't.
On 17, we have another situation with an iron where I'm just like, oh, wow, dude, I don't know what to do. I'm saying six. He's saying 6 or 7 iron. And I'm going, well, it's 187. And it's into a little bit of wind, so it's a 6 iron all day. And he nukes this thing, and it landed in the bunker pin high.
Yeah, he was just left, like, right? Yeah, it was left. Long.
But it would have been long. If it landed in the green, it was off the back.
Oh, gotcha.
And I'm just these numbers are just not making sense to me.
And then the absolute cardinal sin on the 18th hole, he hit it in the water off the tee. But made a great, so he birdied his second ball, made six. Yeah,
which, you know, for McCaupin, that counts. You'd put it down as a 4, mulligan.
Well, you get the 18th tee mully at Pebble Beach. Yeah, everybody knows that.
there's a combination. It's what a horrible, lonely, lonely place it is. And I've been there before. Years ago, is when you just start leaking oil.
Yeah.
And what do we do? What do we do? And that comes down to experience. Ernie Els shoots 8 under, and I'm going, well, yeah, because Ernie Els has got nothing to lose.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He could get into a PGA Tour event next week. Yeah, he might play Champions Tour. He doesn't care. Yeah. He can go out and be as free as you want. And I look at it and I go, we should have won that event by 5 or 6 shots because this guy is potentially so much better than everyone else, but it's professional golf. It shows how tough the game is mentally, physically, and when we're out there carrying for amateurs, you just sit there and go, really, mate?
Yeah,
you're just not that good.
You're not.
So
Tim O'Neill is, but you're not.
But that would be my I thoroughly enjoyed the week. He's a wonderful guy,
and still he's played in 2 events. That was his best finish on the Champions Tour. And you guided him to his best finish on the Champions Tour. And I think he's got a bright future if he can get in events.
Now, one thing I've noticed is that tour, the players vote on a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of those is relating to how many exemptions and how many invites, how many qualifiers on a Monday. Because I'll be honest, I don't think those guys want players like Tim O'Neill out there. The guys have
taking
just turned
money
50
out of their pockets.
Because there was... With some of these events, is there a no cut?
Yeah, most of them, I think.
Like, if you don't make the cut in this thing, those guys are there shooting plus 24, 25. Like, what are you doing? That's just,
get out of there.
Home. You know, Monday qualifiers, I remember always when Neil was trying to qualify for this, and we're looking at it and going, what, there's 3 qualifying spots in pre-qualifier and about the same to get into the tournament from the qualifier on the Monday.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
There
should be 20 guys there. Yeah,
there's not many spots. Those guys like to protect their tour, and protect their money. The career money cuts made. It all counts towards retaining their status on the tour.
Yeah,
but if you're good enough, and I believe Tim O'Neill is, he can play his way on. Ken Tanigawa did. He was a nothing and played his way onto the tour. Mm-hmm. Tim O'Neill gets a few more exemptions, plays mm-hmm. his way onto the tournament. He has some good finishes. He's gonna mm-hmm. he's gonna have a healthy career out there, and I think he will. I think you will see Tim O'Neill out on the Champions Tour doing well.
Well, if there was two, if there was one time I could go back, I wish we could go back to the fifth tee at the Mid Spyglass. It's and just say, let's take an extra couple of minutes. We don't need to rush.
Yeah,
let's talk about this. What we're doing here, like, just sometimes.
I feel your pain, brother. You're preaching to the choir.
Exactly, but you know, there and then 14 fairway. You know, you just go okay, because I think if we lay up, we get top five, top seven, mm-hmm. and that's a different kettle of fish for him and for me. So, but good experience.
It's a good week. I'm glad you covered the job. Thank you. You did a phenomenal job, as I knew you would.
Excellent. Thank you for the call. We'll now move on to a couple of mailbag questions and our shout-outs.
Four!
Now, I can confirm it's Kate McLaughlin.
As I said, yes, Kate McLaughlin. Yeah.
I don't know where O'Loughlin came from. But very anyway.
Nice young lady. It was great to meet you, Kate.
We never asked her, but she did say her brother's a big fan as well.
She did. She said her and her brother listened to the podcast.
Kate's brother. Now, we actually, I'm only going to use the one question just now. It's from a Sean McQuitty, and he's from Chandler in Arizona.
What's up, Sean?
He's 61, and he used to be in manufacturing.
Manufacturing what?
Manufacturing something.
Yeah, there you go.
You're a manufacturer of good golf scores.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta massage the scorecard.
And he's a 3 handicap, and he started caddying on some mini tours. Okay.
Recently?
Yeah.
He's 61?
Symmetra. No, like caddying. Yeah. Not playing them as a caddy. So he asks, from a caddy perspective, what rules and fractions do I need to be aware of that I might commit that can cause my golfer a penalty, loss of hole, or disqualification? I've listed a number below that I'm aware of. What can you add to this? Right. So the first one, the caddy put his hand into the sand in a bunker to test its consistency at the US Amateur and cost his player the tournament. Never actually cost him the tournament. He cost him the
loss
of hole.
Which match play, loss of hole.
Ultimately, there's no guarantee that he'd have won the next round.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a good one, obviously.
Big no-no. Don't do that.
They changed the rule where, and I nearly got caught out with this. I've mentioned it before, I think, but when the rake is in the bunker in a professional golf tournament, the player used to have to put his foot in the sand before you could go in and grab it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I didn't know that before I carried on a
tour.
A
couple of bizarre ones like that,
That's absurd though, isn't it? He then says, Ian Woosnam's caddy who failed to realise he'd more than 14 clubs in the bag until after the start. I recall Woosnam saying the caddy has one job to do and failed to do it. Well, I'm going to have to interject there because I know the caddy involved.
Oh, do you?
Uh-huh. And they're on the range. And he says to Woosnam, he says, listen, we still have two drivers in the bag. You have to drop them. And Woosnam turned to him and said, listen, I'll deal with that.
What?
Yeah. So the guy told me, I asked him, we're in the bus one day and traveling to an event, and I asked him, this is what happened, and he told me the story. So he says, well, you know what? Screw him. Your job.
We're there for yardage and blame, and he got the blame.
A caddy in the Corn Ferry who picked up his player's ball in a shallow water hazard before the player had instructed him to do so, costing his player penalty strokes, leading to an irate player and termination.
Wait a sec. The ball was in the hazard?
Shallow water hazard, and the player hadn't instructed him to pick it up.
So he incurred an extra penalty in addition to being in the hazard?
Would be.
Huh? I don't find that hard to believe.
Well, he's taking it. Sean's taking the time to write this down.
Okay. Well, gotta believe him then. I learned a new one. I didn't know that.
I'm guessing what the meaning of this is, the player has to then declare that ball is lost, or, oh, that ball's in the hazard, I'm taking a drop. Yeah, must have to declare it. Because I would imagine the player has to be the one picking the ball up.
I've never really thought about it. I would think if it's in a hazard, unplayable, like underwater where you can't get a swing on it, I wouldn't have thought that you couldn't pick it up and say.
I think it must come from the fact of where did it enter the hazard, etc. Because if you think about, if you're on a cart path, I'm going to take relief. from my stance. It's always the player that marks
the
tee.
Yeah, they have to take relief.
So I'm guessing that's what it's all about.
Okay.
The Symetra caddy who caught a ride from a cart to get to the bathroom during the round and had her playing, or had her player penalised. She said later, well, there you go. We'll not go into that.
Well, that happened here too at Pebble Beach in the USM.
Is that then amateur golf, or I thought it was, is it pro as well?
I think it's anything. Caddies can't ride on carts no matter what during the round, anytime during the round, unless they're instructed to do so. Like if they're going out for a playoff hole, or if there's a rain delay and they bring them in and then shuttle them back out. They're not allowed to get in golf carts.
Mm-hmm. There was a girl. She later said, "If I had a dick, I would have whipped it out behind a tree."
Wow!
With words like that, I'm surprised you don't.
Yeah.
In general, standing behind your player during a shot or holding the umbrella over their head during a shot. Well, yeah, the umbrella one, that should just be a health and safety matter. And it's pathetic that a golfer would want that done.
Yeah, that, I mean, not really. I mean, I get it.
Stay dry over the ball? Come
on. Yeah, before they put those drops of water, add weight to the ball, throws it offline.
Well, standing behind your player, you know, that comes from probably the LPGA.
That was recently changed like 4 or 5 years ago. It's a great rule.
Yeah.
Well, if they're at address too, and a lot of the tour pro would do that on putts too. They would say, stand directly behind me and tell me where I'm aimed. And they can't do that anymore. Once you address the ball and you're ready to strike the putt, that caddy cannot be on your line of your in front or back. They can't be directly on your line.
Mm-hmm. Using slope and a rangefinder during tournaments.
Yeah.
I knew that. But in all fairness, you know, slope. What is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're not allowed to, but who cares? I mean, if you're... Depends what level you're playing at too, because most of those tours you can't use rangefinders to begin with.
There's one rule that should actually no longer be for anyone, is if you hit the fairway and end up in someone's divot.
Ridiculous.
Like, when are they going to change this?
Worst rule ever in golf. I never got the logic to that rule either, because the logic to me is we've been cleaning our balls for a long time, our golf balls. Get your mind out of the gutter. you hit the green. You mark the ball and clean it. Why can't it be the same in the fairway? You hit the fairway, mark the ball and clean it. Yeah, that's going to present some more work for us as caddies when people, we got to clean the ball if I can mark it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you hit the fairway, you shouldn't be penalized. You should have a perfect lie. If you hit the fairway, you should have the perfect lie that you want in the fairway if you hit the fairway.
Exactly. Well, take my example of Tim O'Neill, 7th hole, spyglass, bombs at 320, 325.
Unacceptable.
Ends up in someone's divot.
Unacceptable.
We're only 208 yards to the pin.
He has no chance.
And we cannot go for it because he's in someone else's divot.
It's the dumbest rule in the game, and I don't know what they're waiting for.
I think it would... See, I don't always remember growing up and them saying, a seeded divot, you could get relief from that. But you can't get relief from an actual divot.
Yeah, it's so stupid. They will change it eventually, I think.
Are there any... he's Epson Tour. Question for a new caddy on the Epson Tour. My apologies for that, Sean. Are there any additional rules you think a caddy should know in addition to what he's given?
Man, he's covered most that I can think of. I mean,
I honestly...
Marking the ball, you can only mark the ball if the player instructs you to, and then you have to mark it before he can remark it, I think. I don't think he can just put his ball down after you've marked it for him. I think you have to put the ball back down, I believe.
No, I think they changed it.
Oh, did they? Oh, there you go.
I remember Langer got penalized for this 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, and they changed it.
We'd have to look into that one.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to it. But no, he covered most of them.
They're always changing rules. And I think last week, I'll be honest, I just tried to do the very basics, which I struggle with anyway, turn up on time. Try and keep the clubs clean.
You do struggle with both.
Like, I kept on getting paranoid about dropping the bag, like, you know, because it's the big tour bags.
Yeah.
And you're a wee bit windy where we are. Do you leave it standing up or you let it go?
You almost always have to lay it down.
Got to lay it down. Yeah. And then you're thinking, do you lay it down in the white part that has his name? But I honestly can't remember, you know, any other rules. I think you can
We'll
think
get back
of,
to that, sure. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sean. If you do have questions, email them in, podcast@glorifieddonkey.com, or do it via Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Got to move on to some shout-outs. Zabo, what you got?
Well, I had an interesting one. I got a shout-out, a guy I caddied for many months ago, Ewan Seam. I caddied for him, He messaged me through Venmo, which is how he paid me that round. But Ewan's been listening to the podcast, loves it, so got to shout you out. Thanks for listening. Appreciate that. Also got a shout-out. You know who else has been listening to the podcast? My brother has been listening
really?
To the podcast. Yeah, my brother, Augie. So, Augie, thank you for listening to the podcast. Appreciate you.
We go, Augie, Augie, Augie.
Oi, oi, oi.
That's it. Yeah.
There you go. That's how we do it. No, we're Italian. We don't do that.
Okay.
But yeah, that's all I got. My brother and you. And I got a shout out. Got a shout out Terry Grifford. Got a shout out Chris McCoppin. Got a shout out Bob Burton. Got a shout out Bill McAdden and the whole crew.
It was great
to have you out. Kevin Egan. Got to shout you out.
Oh, Kevin Egan.
We could have a podcast on you by yourself.
Just about him. What about Man Bun's brother-in-law?
Oh, Logan, how are you, Logan?
Somebody said that to me the other day. They said, you guys haven't shouted out Man Buns.
Yeah, is Logan still listening? I hope he is. I mean,
oh, dude, Man Bun was with us at Spyglass.
Was he?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I tell you what, I heard him in the range, super loud.
Yeah, he always
is. I thought,
oh
man, he's going to be. This.
He's on one today.
But he wasn't. He was so well behaved.
Hello?
He actually helped with a couple of the putts.
Wow, that's unusual for him.
You know, I just wanted confirmation, you know.
Good for Man Bun.
But I want to say hello to a number of people here. We get Mike Wynn, who plays out at Archer Field in the Edinburgh area in Scotland.
Nice.
Mike's been listening to the podcast lately. Matt Estrada, he's always very vocal on Twitter with anything that we have to say.
Nice.
There's a Tim Miller. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. He played in our group about 2 weeks ago.
Our group, you mean you and I?
No, not us.
Gotcha.
I don't think you're in this loop. That was the Jimmy Burke loop.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Oh, that was another beauty. Jimmy Burke.
I know guys named Jimmy Burke.
Yeah.
They're all the same, those Jimmy Burkes.
Tim Miller, I think he may well be the first golfer I've ever met from Nebraska.
Not too many. Troy Baumgartner's one, but yeah, there's not too many.
Okay, so well, there you go. There's a second, but yeah. I didn't know that. It's very seldom we caddy for somebody, and I still wasn't caddying for him. He was in the group.
Gotcha, yeah.
I was also in another podcast.
You were?
So about 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, I met a guy called Joe Anderson. He was here with his mate, Chris, and hopefully next month we're going to head out to Scottsdale or Phoenix and play in Chris's charity golf event.
Nice.
However,
you were on his, what was his podcast?
So Joe Anderson is a financial advisor, and he has a podcast called Your Money, Your Wealth.
And for some reason, he thought Big G would be a great guest to have on Your Money, Your Wealth podcast.
Well, he was talking to his producers, a lady called Andy, and Joe's partner in crime is called Big Al.
Big Al.
Right. So Big Al was on holiday.
Ah.
And Joe wanted to create a little content with myself talking about the similarities between what he does and what we do.
Gotcha. Schmoozing and yeah.
So we'd put that, you know, and we came to the conclusion that caddying is a much harder job than being a
there you go.
Financial advisor.
But financial advising can pay better sometimes.
Yeah, well, very true. So there you go. Your Money, Your Wealth. It's on all the platforms. So thanks, guys, for having us. Of course, Kate McLaughlin.
Yes, Kate.
Another experience I had just the other day was with a guy called Andy Brown, his wife, and I think his in-laws or his parents. I was walking from the 18th down to the bench, and I get talking to these people. They wanted a photo. And then the one guy says, is your name Gordon? I went, yes. He goes, I recognize your voice.
Wow.
From the Real Life Carry podcast. I went, that's unbelievable. So his name's Andy Brown.
That's cool.
And unfortunately, I couldn't work for him yesterday because I'm in the process of moving house. But that was twice in a week.
That's pretty cool.
And of course, Tim O'Neill. Thank you, Tim. I know you'll be listening. Thank you for a great experience. Hope you're well. Hope to see you again. We'll have you on the podcast at some point.
For sure. For sure.
That was episode number 99, Zabo. Episode number 100. Is
coming
a little
up.
Bit of a special. It's going to be a number of caddy stories or golf related stories told by caddies and golfers and it should be a fast-moving, fun episode. So
I'm excited.
You won't want to miss that.
Get your stories in. Caddies out there.
Yeah.
Call up.
If you
email,
have,
yeah. message. Actually, no, we want their voices. We want them to
Get in contact and then we can organize giving you a call to start those messages. I've already started with that process. So
do you already have a few?
Yeah. It could be a minute or it could be 4 minutes. We want
give us a story.
Don't want people going on and on and on, right? Short, sharp. But we've already got some really good material. So that'll be in a couple of weeks' time. Until then, many thanks for your time, Zabo.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for the phone call.
Of course. Well, you're the best man for the job.
Okay. 16th, 17th call, but I saw your call log.
You were on the list for sure. You were on the radar. And I got to shout you out as well. You did give me a cut of your winnings, which was very generous. I'm not sure I would have done the same, but in hindsight.
Very few caddies would, be honest.
Yeah, very, very few. That was very nice of you, and I appreciate
it. Well, I will tell you that the percentage that I gave you would have remained regardless of the finish.
Damn it, Tim. Why couldn't you play better? No, I'm just kidding, Tim.
So you can ask Natalia about that because I already said till the beginning of the week.
Well, that was very kind of you. Thank you.
That would have been a nice bumper day for both of us, but it wasn't to be. Maybe next time. But yeah, no. So the listeners, many thanks for your time. Get out, share the podcast, spread the words, listen to any episodes you may have missed, and until the next time, enjoy your golf, but don't get angry.
Because you're just not that good.